This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at chrisducker.com/Rainmaker.
This is Youpreneur FM, the official podcast of the Youpreneur Mastermind community. A place where no entrepreneur gets left behind in their pursuit of building a business they can be proud of.
And now,
here's your host, serial entrepreneur and best-selling author, Chris Ducker.
Well, hello and welcome to episode number 177 of Youpreneur FM. Thank you so much for being with me. You're in the right place. You are in the right place. If you are a coach, a speaker, an author, an expert, a blogger, a podcaster, or anyone building your business around you, what you stand for, and what you're all about, that's what we focus on here on Youpreneur FM. Today, I've got a fantastic show lined up with my very good friend, Srini Rao from The Unmistakable Creative. However, before we get into that conversation, just want to remind you very quickly, for the whole month of August here, the entire month, we're doing a special promo over at youpreneur.com. For anybody that goes ahead and joins the community before our first birthday, right? We're 1 year old on September 1. Not only will you be locked in at our current price, because it is going to be going up on September 1, but we're also throwing in a couple of fantastic bonuses as well if you get in as part of the community before the end of August. So obviously you get access to our entire training library, and there are hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of content in there for you to learn how to build a business based around your personal brand, plus all of our process blueprints, all of our bonus material, and access to the entire archive of all of the Tropical Think Tank keynotes and all of our mastermind calls and all the rest of it. Look, I could waffle on and on and on about how great our community is, but just head over right now to youpreneur.com and check out all the information over there, and make sure that you get involved before the end of the month. So on to my chat with Srini. Now, Srini and I actually go back a long time. I mean, he was probably one of the first people that I really started to converse with when I started getting active online in late 2009. And he was actually the man who introduced me to my literary agent, who ended up helping me get my first book deal with Virtual Freedom. So the history is deep. However, we don't talk that often. But whenever we do, there's always this great camaraderie between the two of us, and just a fantastic discussion takes place on everything from entrepreneurship to self-development to time management, productivity, and just ultimately being great at what we do. And this particular conversation, I zeroed in a little bit on Srini and his own journey as a personal brand entrepreneur and what he's been able to achieve as somebody who's truly focusing in on building his business based around him and his ideals and the people that he's serving. Trust me, guys, you're going to love this conversation with Srini, and it's a fun one too. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Here we go. So Srini, welcome back to the show, my man.
Well, it is really a pleasure to be back here after so long.
It's been a long time. Now, look, in my prep for today's chat, I looked back, okay, on when you were here. This is episode 177. The last time you were here was episode 10.
Wow.
Now, it's not like we fell out or anything.
No, not at all.
But that's a long time. That's a while to have a break. So I'm pumped to have you back, brother. It's great to be able to get you back on the show. And what I really love about kind of where our journeys have both gone in the last couple of years since we last spoke to you was, like, you've done a complete 180. I've not necessarily done a 180, but I've kind of shifted my focus from kind of virtual team building and delegation, which I still talk about and it's still important, but more along lines now of helping personal brand entrepreneurs, because that's where my passion is, and I love that stuff. And you've done a complete 180. So I want to talk about that. And I want to talk about, obviously, the new book, which I'm pumped about. Your last one was a raving success. So I know, you know, this is just going to do just as well, if not better. And I just really want to get stuck into this whole, let's be creative here as entrepreneurs. Let's not kind of rest on our laurels and just copy people. And we talked about originality on the show before. Episode 165 was a very popular episode where I kind of deep dived as a solo show on why we need to be original, particularly in the online business space. But this is even more different than that. This is beyond originality. Where did all this shift come? Because, I mean, for a while, you were rocking and rolling in the blogging and podcasting world, and you still are, but now in a totally different way. Where did all this shift come from, man? What was the what was the catalyst?
So there are a few things that were catalysts. So part of it was, you know, looking at what was happening in the podcasting space. And also part of it was driven by my own personal interest, right? Like I was getting really kind of sick of listening to people tell me stories of – or not even stories. It was like, oh, this is how I grew my blog. This is how I grew my email list. I'm like, this is really – boring and mind-numbing. I really don't give a shit about any of this anymore.
Right.
And interspersed between that, you would find interviews with certain people. Like I interviewed this graffiti artist, Eric Wall, and I'm literally at a friend's house who, you know, had told me he was one of the very friends that had an influence on this direction. He said, you know, there are certain interviews that I find appealing. He said, I don't really think the ones where you interview bloggers and online content creators are all that interesting. He's like, I like the people who have really interesting stories. So, you know, we started looking at this as a pattern. You know, we'd have like a graffiti artist or somebody who had spent time in prison, and they very rarely talked about anything related to building a blog or related to building an audience or how to get traffic and, you know, all the stuff that typically goes into a lot of these interviews.
Right.
So we started realizing, we're like, wow, we're really you know, making an impact is not with the sort of educating or teaching, but with storytelling. And storytelling was just so much more expansive. There were so many more possibilities with it. So much so, you know, we've produced an animated series based on the Unmistakable Creative. You know, we've done a live event. But the idea that you could take this idea, and I can't entirely take credit for this because a mentor, a guy named Greg Hartle, played a really impactful role. He said, what have been your favorite interviews? When I told him, he said, you know, the theme, and he said, what have been the listeners' favorite interviews? And none of them were the ones about building blogs. They were all about these people who had just amazing, inspiring stories. And he said, you could get that out of every single guest. And you know this, Chris, because you've been a guest and you know that when we did another interview, it was a different story. Like, we didn't talk about a lot of the things we would typically have talked about before.
Yes.
And so you started to realize, like, wow, every one of these people has these sort of really deep, rich narratives, and we don't talk about really interesting things. So, you know, I'll give you an example. So at Sally Hogshead recently, right? Like, you can talk about the entire concept of fascination, but I didn't open with that. I asked her what her birth order was and the impact that that had on all the things that she ended up doing with her life as the opening question.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, you start a conversation like that, the moment somebody presses play, they're into this very riveting, sort of engaging story. But so Greg Hartle, you know, who was one of my mentors, who actually came up with the name Unmistakable Creative, he kind of could see like 200 steps ahead. And he said, I think that you need to do a substantial rebrand. And along with the rebrand, the show is going to change, because that's how you're going to hit momentum. And that's how you're going to get to another level. And so we gutted the Blogcast FM brand. I mean, we kept the audience, but, you know, we rebranded everything, you know, artwork. And a lot of it was, you know, we stopped looking at what everybody was doing in the online space. And we didn't look at things from, you know, sort of an optimization perspective. Instead, we're like, what would be really cool? What would be something that nobody would think to do but us? And what would we look at and say, okay, well, this really lights my eyes up. You know, like, we have sort of a filter for how we do what we do at Unmistakable Creative. Like, my sort of ethos is, if I don't feel it, it's not ready for the audience yet.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, I think the greatest satisfaction I take in my work is producing a very sort of visceral, emotional response in the person who, you know, interacts with it. And you know, I've said this, but, you know, I said this the other day on Facebook. I said, you know, true resonance lies in your ability to create a visceral, emotional response in the audience that your work is intended for. And if you don't feel that, you can't expect that an audience will. And so, you know, the other sort of aspect of it that got planted in my head, so that was the sort of inkling of where it started. But then Mars Dorian said something to me that forever stayed with me. You know, I jokingly say I should probably give him half of my you know, my advance for my book, which I'm not going to do, by the way.
No. Mars, if you're listening in, don't ask. You're not going to get it.
So he said something to me that I really, you know, I have to credit him for this idea. He said, you know, if you look at anything that he does, it is so distinctive, so unique, so original that he doesn't even have to put his signature on it. You can take one look at it and you can say,
oh yeah,
Mars Dorian did that.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
And
by the way, pretty much since day one, like, for as long because you and I kind of met at around the same time as I believe we both met with Mars online,
right.
Like
exactly.
Talking about like late 2009, early 2010-ish. And he had that style then.
Yeah.
And it's here we are.
Significant.
Yeah. But even though it's evolved, though, if you look at his older stuff and you look at what he's done now, it's still him. Like, it's clearly him, right?
Totally.
Yeah.
So in that process, like, I fell in love with that idea. And so Mars, you know, so naturally I'm like, well, who else would we hire to do this? You know, when we were doing the rebrand, I remember looking at the website, you know, our designer said, Srini, can you put together some stock photography? And I said, something doesn't look right about this. It's got no flair. It's got no style. It's not sexy. I'm like, oh my God, I know what's wrong with it. I'm like, I think we should have Mars custom design all the icons. And all the stuff that goes on the page. And so Mars started working with us. He designed the logo for Unmistakable Creative. He's designed a ton of stuff. Like, he actually did all the chapter illustrations for the book. But the thing that I think we inherited from Mars is that same sort of thing where now, like, when our work rolls through your Facebook newsfeed, you know it's ours, you know? Like, doesn't matter what we create. Like, we've went out of our way to create a signature that is so unique and so distinctive that even if you tried, you'd fail to replicate it because, you know, we're doing things that nobody would think to do. And we're not looking at, you know, what every popular online marketer is doing. We're like, you know what, we're borrowing from other art forms. And so so that's, you know, in a nutshell, kind of how it all came together.
Love it.
And so now you have this sort of ethos of, you know what, we don't want to be the best at what we do. We want to be the only.
I love it. I love it. Okay, great. And that, you know, we've talked at length about, you know, the focus on the business of you. And when you build the business around you and what you stand for and the people that you want to serve, there's no real competition out there because ultimately it's not copyable. It's not duplicatable. And I want to dive into that a little bit with you. But before we do that, however, I want to ask this question because this was a shift that you made quite some time ago in regards to the rebrand and the refocus and all the rest of it. Why has it taken so long for this new book to come about? Because I'm like, as an author myself, I'm 2 years now, and yet, as you well know, you introduced me to my literary agent. I'm 2.5 years, almost 2.5 years now, post Virtual Freedom coming out. I'm getting the itch to write another book.
Yeah.
But I mean, why has it taken so long for you to come out with this new book?
So there's a couple of things to keep in mind here. So the timeline is important, right? So I got, I self-published a book called The Art of Being Unmistakable. I think that's back when you had me last time I was here, in 2013. So that took on a life of its own, became a Wall Street Journal bestseller, you know, so all sorts of crazy stuff. Fast forward 2014, like, you know, we rebrand, we, you know, put on an event, a lot of things go wrong in my life and business, which, you know, those are kind of irrelevant details. Then you fast forward to 2015, an editor at Penguin reaches out to me based on something I wrote on Medium, and we get into discussing ideas for a book.
I love hearing these stories about how editors and publishers and all that stuff find you. So I love those kind of stories.
So
they're great.
That Cinderella story is great. Keep in mind, there were literally, at that point, we had done 300 or 400 podcasts. Okay.
Okay.
We've been working at this for – so here's the thing. I think this is really important that people understand this because people love those Cinderella stories. They don't realize what goes into the Cinderella story is a lot of work that – you know, nobody knew who the hell I was for last year. And, you know, on a grander scale, nobody still knows who the hell I am. So, you know, the thing that happens, though, that, so that was like, you know, one Medium post that I wrote in 2013 that an editor found in 2015. And I never stopped writing during that entire time. I've been writing 1,000 words a day. So she came to me with, you know, a few different ideas. She said, hey, you know, I want to do the 1,000-word book. And I was, you know, as we went back and forth, she's like, what do you think about expanding the self-published book? So then somehow, you know, fast forward the conversation, you know, she says, I'm ready to make an offer with no, like, I got lucky. I didn't have to do a lot of things that a lot of people have to do.
Right.
And so then my agent calls me on Friday and says, there's been a development. They want to make an offer for 2 books, not one. Nice. So it ended up being a 2-book deal. So we realized this is the ultimate irony is that in The Art of Being Unmistakable, I never once defined, you know, my definition of unmistakable. So she said, I think this is a much bigger idea. I think it's much more expansive and could be expanded into a much deeper book. So this new book, it was written in 6 months. So, you know, I wrote a 45,000 word manuscript in 6 months because I got the book deal in April, like the official word. I submitted the manuscript, the first version in November, and then the final version in January. And you know, publishing, like a lot of this stuff takes time because covers have to be designed, all that stuff. So that's why it took so long. But this was a much deeper book. Like it's, you know, it's 200 pages. This time it's like case studies. And it's all organized in surf metaphors. So it has like an organizing principle. It has a true arc and narrative. The first book was a bit like a collection of random thoughts because that's what it really was. It was like a bunch of Facebook status updates thrown into a book, you know?
Sure.
So that's why it took as long as it did.
Okay.
The other thing that I will say about the length of time that it takes to write a book, or, you know, I think that if I had gotten a book deal 3 years ago, it's not that I probably couldn't have gotten a book deal with the platform. It would not be the book that it is. I am really happy that it's taken as long as it has because I am a significantly better writer now than I was then.
Yeah.
And most people don't like that idea because there's a hidden danger to getting really fast success. You end up creating work that your work isn't truly fully what it's capable of being. This book is literally 1,000 times better than anything I could have written even 2 years ago.
I love that. Yeah, and I like the fact that you're acutely aware of that fact as well, because that shows that self-awareness that I think a lot of people lack. Even very creative people like yourself, you know, where they are always looking to try and move the needle and push the boundaries a little bit. And, you know, and I hate to use management speak here, but think outside of the box, you know, that kind of thing. Like, I like the fact that you're aware of that and that you're calling it out as well, because a lot of people just keep it to themselves. So I think that's kind of cool. So look, I mean,
flawed in numerous ways, trust me.
Well, we know this. but let me ask you this. I mean, when you were going through, you know, the rebrand and kind of like focusing on, like, you know, putting together a new focus and, you know, understanding in the process that you were obviously going to lose a certain amount of your listeners and maybe a certain amount of your subscribers. I mean, how did you feel? Because I get this question all the time. I'm about to go through a rebrand. Mm-hmm. How do I let my subscribers, my viewers, my listeners, my readers know what I'm up to so I don't lose as many as I potentially maybe could if I just kind of just one day flip the switch? What did you do with that rebrand? And then I want to get into kind of really going in deep diving into the concept of the book. But I mean, what did you do in regards to like genuinely sitting back and like figuring out where you were going to take this and, you know, when you hit that button?
So we kind of ignored everything our audience told us, to be honest.
Which goes completely against what I tell my listeners to do.
so we had sort of the Steve Jobs attitude of, you won't know what you want until we show it to
you. Okay, and that's a fair comment. I get it, yeah.
You know, like, so basically I remember very specifically, I put out an ad on, or a status on update on Facebook and said, hey, you know, we're going to be changing the name of the show and rebranding. And every online marketer, every expert, everybody's like, why would you change the name of Blogcast FM? It's such a perfect name. It's the podcast for bloggers. We didn't listen to what anybody said. Some people gave a few names and they were all lousy. So we're like, no, your ideas. So we honestly didn't listen. And we said, we're going to dazzle you. We're going to show you something that will blow your mind. And here's the thing, right? If you're going to ignore what the audience says, what you deliver after ignoring them, better blow their minds. Like, it better shatter every expectation they have. So, like, now if you visit unmistakablecreative.com, the moment you land there, you're like, this is unusual. This is not like any other site that I've seen that, you know, a podcaster has. Like, it blends all these things together. It's like art, it's, you know, commerce. It's an art project as much as it is a business, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a very clear line drawn in the sand as to, if you're not this type of person, we're not for you.
Sure.
And we don't care if we're not for you because we're not interested in, you know, people who aren't. I don't want lukewarm people who kind of like me. So here's something that is worth $1 million for your listeners. Paul Graham, Sam Altman, both major investors, you know, they both work with Y Combinator. They said you're better off building something a small number of people absolutely love than something a bunch of people kind of like.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that to me was very telling. It's like, you know what? This is really true because a small number of people who absolutely love what you do, they'll go out and spread the word. They'll become your biggest advocates.
Oh, yeah.
And so that idea kind of stuck with us. So, we just ignored the feedback of our audience, but we also knew that, okay, because here's the thing, like what people say and what they behave like are two different things. Oh, we absolutely kind of looked at their behavior and we're like, okay, you guys are saying you don't want us to change the name of the show, but you're not understanding. We're making this decision based on what your listening patterns are. So we did pay attention to the audience in that sense. Like, we looked at, we're like, what are the most talked about interviews? We're like, very clearly, if we rebrand the show and produce content just like our most popular interviews, like, let's do what works, you know? I mean, if you look at the entire journey of my sort of building, you know, our brand, it's always been a pattern of, you know, and I just noticed because my friend who I'm staying with mentioned it to me, it's been a constant pattern of trying things, looking at what works, and discarding all the things that don't work, and doubling down on the thing that works over and over again. And believe me, there are way more things that didn't work than did work. But right. The thing is, you had enough of those things that did that it builds momentum.
Mm.
If that makes sense.
Hopefully it does. No, it does. Question. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Okay. So, all right. So when we're in the process then of building our businesses to affect change, to create to attract the right kind of people,
sure,
and to ultimately, I guess at the same time, repel the wrong kind of people away. And I've used the terminology and you know, the analogy rather of a magnet. You want to market like a magnet, right? We're in the process of doing that. What things should we take into consideration in your kind of mindset here when it comes to wanting to stand out, wanting to be that creative soul, that needle mover for people, mm-hmm, that they're going to be able to remember and come back to over and over again, do you think?
So there's a lot of things. I mean, you and I could do a two-hour conversation about
easy
that alone. So
easy.
I think let's start with sort of high level. Conviction and values are a really big deal. I think too many people waver in their message based on what's popular. They're too influenced by what other people who have higher perceived status than them think or say or do, right? So somebody can listen to you and me, and the worst thing they could do is literally take a, like, I think the worst thing that anybody could do is to listen to an interview on this podcast and take whatever advice they heard and treat it as gospel and literally follow that advice to the letter. The truth is, I was early to the space of podcasting because in a course, one of the lessons was interview one person as a way to get traffic to your blog.
Mm.
It wasn't start an entire interview series. I veered off the path, you know, and had my own interpretation to those instructions. So that's one thing. Of course, with that comes conviction and beliefs. Like, I have very, you know, like, I we somebody told me once, creativity is a pathological inability to accept the status quo. I love that. And I said, you know what? I am building a movement and a community for people who have a pathological inability to accept the status quo. If you are not one of those people, we're probably not for you. And so that's conviction. So let's talk about it from sort of a, you know, so now that you've looked at it as sort of a mindset and a higher level, like I said, this could be a two-hour conversation, so I don't want to get too into the weeds. But
right.
Here's what happens, and this is where the entire sort of thesis of Unmistakable came from and what drove me crazy, because I watched it happen over and over and over and over again, right? So somebody sees somebody who's had success like you or Pat Flynn or whatever, and I can't tell you the number of times that I would see somebody who would look at somebody popular and not just, you know, try to do everything they've done, but literally to the letter. I've seen people take the design.
Oh, it's brutal.
Changing little more than the name.
Yeah.
And they're like, hey, you know, like Chris Gillibo made a really good point. He gets a lot of emails of people saying, hey, I want to start, you know, a blog about, you know, my lifestyle design and become a location independent blogger in Thailand, or my life's journey to doing this interesting work. And he said, well, that's not really interesting. That's not particularly compelling because it's kind of been done. You know, that's kind of over and done with. But I saw this over and over and over and over again, so much to the point where it drove me crazy. I'm like, wow, this is like a mimicry epidemic, right? And, you know, I'm going to call it out because it's worth calling out. It's happening in the world of podcasting right now. Like, if you look at the lineup of guests on a lot of podcasts,
it's the same.
Like an echo chamber of nonsense.
And they're all saying exactly the same thing. And
yes,
for the record, this is the reason why I went dark as an interviewee, like as an actual guest on people's podcasts. I said no to any and all requests to be on shows for around 4 to 5 months because, honestly, I found myself saying the same things over and over again. And I was like, I'm not serving anybody like this. I'm going to go dark for 4 or 5 months. And I did. And to the point where I was actually getting tweets from people saying, dude, are you okay? Like, what's going on? We haven't heard you anywhere. So, but again, you know, we talked a minute ago about your awareness of doing what you're doing and knowing that now was the time, and it was a good thing that you didn't write the book 2-3 years ago and you waited. That awareness for me was, you know what, I'm repeating myself. I'm sounding like a broken record. I need to take a break and kind of regroup here a little bit on what I'm saying and how I'm wanting to help people. And I tell you what, when I came back and I started, and now I only do 2 interviews a week. I could do probably 15 a week, but now I only do 2 a week. And I feel so much more confident, so much more happier. And I can hear the passion in my voice because I'm not like a broken record. You know, I'm coming out with new stuff all the time. And I'm aware of that fact as well. So I'm so glad that you bring that up, because I know a lot of people want the exposure on people's shows and everything, but understand, if you get the opportunity to come on a show, any show, you got to bring it. You can't just be a carbon copy from the interview you did last week.
Totally. And God, I so agree with that. And that's why I've been very selective about choosing the interviews that I wanted to do with certain podcasters, because I wanted shows where I knew the hosts were really interesting and good. Like, I just had a chat with my friend Mike Vardy, and like we had
love Mike.
One of the most fascinating.
I don't know whether Mike is speaking at Tropical Think Tank next year here in the Philippines.
Very cool.
Yeah. Love Mike.
So, yeah, I mean, and he asked so many insightful questions. I was like, wow, Mike isn't, he doesn't have like the most massive or popular podcast, but I loved that interview because we had a conversation that made me think that, I think challenged both of us to really think differently. I'm like, okay, cool. This is valuable to my audience as well as his, because I'm talking about things that I haven't talked about 100 times. Mm. And see, you don't just see this in podcasting. You see it in life coaching, right? There's a great sketch on The Daily Show that Dimitri Martin did, where a life coaching client goes to a life coach, and at the end of her coaching period, she discovers that her calling in life is to be a life coach. And you see this over and over again, right? So somebody, copies it to the letter, and it's just like, and this is really the core point I think you got to drive home with what I want to say, is that the problem with copying anybody's work to the letter or treating their advice as gospel is that you literally suck the soul out of whatever it is. The very essence of what makes you unmistakable is gone the moment you do that, because now you're parroting and mimicking in your own intuition and instinct, which should dominate the creative aspects of your work, which should dominate the way you tell your stories, the way you design your sites. All of that becomes secondary, and it should actually be the primary thing, while the tactics and the techniques and all that stuff, while necessary. I think my friend Eric Wall had a brilliant quote. He said, that logical left-brained side, necessary, but no longer sufficient. And the problem is that when you get mired in tactics and you're looking at things like, part of why I think Seth Godin's advice is so brilliant, yet also frustrating, is the man never gives you a map. He gives you a compass. Mm. Because if you give people a compass, and I will tell you stories, just 2 things from the Unmistakable Creative, is people will come up with solutions and ideas that they would have never come up with if you gave them a map. So, we have parents who homeschool kids using the content from the Unmistakable Creative. I just, like I was telling you, I just went and talked to a group of prisoners at a maximum security facility here in California.
I love the way that you say maximum security at a prison. Scary time, right?
That's important to emphasize. It was San Quentin. Like, here are guys in a prison reading my books,
That's cool.
And the thing is, you start to have an effect with your work that you could never possibly have with just a map.
So true.
And so that's what I would say, really, is this don't deny the essence of who you are and what you can give to the world by just letting yourself be drowned in other people's voices.
Yeah, that's so true, man. That's so true. So, all right, as we wrap up here in the last sort of 5, 6, 7 minutes of the chat, let's deep dive to a certain degree and kind of really look into what the message of this new book is. What do you want people to take away? Because I'm always saying, it's a great idea to write a book. It's a great brand building exercise. It's I think Chris Brogan once told me over coffee that it was a
$25 business card.
Yeah. 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 We've had this conversation.
I remember conversations, man.
And so it's there's more to it though. And I think there are millions of books published every year.
Sure.
And it's becoming, I guess, to a certain degree, more and more and more competitive, particularly in the entrepreneurial space, particularly in the you know, in the space that I try and serve as best as possible with this show in regards to people that are building businesses around them and their expertise, you know, it's a no-brainer to write a book to get your name out there, but it's competitive as hell. I mean, what is the focus for you with this book now then? I mean, is it just part of that, or is there a bigger kind of
I think there's a bigger plan? There is definitely a bigger message. I mean, obviously, it's leading to speaking engagements and all sorts of, you know, the sort of ancillary stuff that a book leads to. So I'm one of these writers who likes writing books. Like, it's not just a means to something else for me. Like, I enjoy writing books. Like, to me, I want to write more books. You know, and books change. And, you know, by the time the next book comes out, I mean, how we consume books will change. But, I want a message that is timeless, that viscerally impacts people and actually spurs real change in their lives, that leads them to something interesting, something original, something that they would have never thought of, and that actually really holds them to a higher standard. And that's another thing I think that is very, very important to talk about, because I think that people mail it in way too much. I really do. I think that somebody once told me that just because, you know, somebody said, you know that you don't have to like go over the top with every single thing you do.
Okay.
And I really fundamentally disagree with that. Okay. Because I don't see what the point in doing it is if you're not going to do it that way. Like, I want things I produce to be like, I want the reaction to be, oh my God, every single time. And I am constantly trying to figure out how to do that. So, you know, like, I'm reading this biography on Walt Disney right now, and it said, you know, one of the big things he was obsessed with was a standard of excellence. And, you know, I've inherited that from various people who I've been influenced by. But I've seen what it does to people who interact with your work. And so I think that, you know, higher standards and the desire to leave like an indelible mark, something that you're like, wow, nobody could have done that.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like this is, I also feel that, I mean, and you're a writer, like you say, you write 1,000 words a day, you write way more than I do, way more. But I've always been more of a talker than a typer, and I've often used that phrase a lot. I think, you know, there's a lot of authors out there that will be multiple book authors. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, with, yep. you know, by the time their career's done or they start wrapping it up, they might have 5, 6, maybe yep. 6 or 7, you know, whatever. Let's say 5, 6, 7 books under their belt. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like this is going to be the one that everybody kind of refers to in your library of books when you're done writing everything you've done?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think this is the book that, you know, Michael Ellsberg said something. He said if he could have one book that was his Michael Was Here book, it will be his next book. As much as I hate to think that this is the, even though it's the first one, yeah, I would say, because this has been my sort of mission in life and central ethos. Like, this is the book that
I'll agree with that, because I've known you long enough to know that this is not a new focus for you. Like, you've always talked. Our conversations have always been very deep compared to, you know, other business type conversations. So I'll agree with you on that 100%.
Yeah. So this is, yeah, I mean, you know, like, I don't, so the one thing I guess that concerns me about that, you know, saying and agreeing to what you say is that I don't want to be forever defined by this one thing. Right. And, you know, and this, so this is maybe a really an interesting way for us to wrap up the conversation, since I know, you know, we're hitting our time limit. Labels, right? Labels create limitations. And most people identify themselves as coach, entrepreneur, blogger, writer, whatever. Mm-hmm. Those labels are limiting. I identify myself primarily as an artist, but also as an entrepreneur, because those labels are much more expansive. Like, you don't hear about podcasters doing an animated series based on their podcast, because that's just not in the job. You know, that is sure. not what is in the limit. You know, when we look at the medium, that's not the first thing you think to do with it.
Yep.
That's what I thought to do with it. Same thing, live events. It's like, okay, how do you go from being a blogger, podcaster, to event producer, to speaker? So that's, you know, the one thing I would say is that labels limit your capacity. You know, don't be the person who sticks to job description. Don't let yourself be limited by the labels that you identify with, because if you do, then the work that you create will be limited. Whereas if you are much more expansive with how you identify yourself, your work will be much more expansive too.
So good to end on. I love that. I think, you know, I think that knowing you the way I do, and we're not like, you know, best buddies or anything, but we've known each other for a long time now. And we've
known each other for like 8 years.
Yeah, it's a long time.
You're one of the first people I met online.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, you know, we've both grown, don't you think? Like, we've grown not just, you know, in our sort of focus from a entrepreneurial pursuit perspective, but also from the idea of how we can best serve people. And I think that for me is something that you've been like really, really good at in regards to, like I said, being aware. It's like, you know, it's like what Gary Vaynerchuk talks about with the whole self-awareness angle that he takes. Like, I think that it's important to be aware. And just wrapping up the way you did just there, it's so obvious to me that you know exactly what part of that journey you're on right now and who you're taking along for the ride. I'm kind of in awe by it, to be honest with you. It's kind of, it makes me want to sit back and maybe have a little bit more of a fancy schmancy sit down time with Chris and figure out where he's going as well, maybe. I like that.
We should do that.
Fancy schmancy is always a good thing.
Yes, yes. And alcohol involved, of course.
Oh, of course. I mean, good scotch is never a bad thing at all. You guys tuning in, the new book, Unmistakable, Why Only is Better Than Best. Go check it out. It's available on Amazon right now, Barnes & Noble, all those other good places. Srini Rao, you're a freaking all-star. Let's not wait 167 episodes
before we do this again.
It's ridiculous. I can't believe there was 167 episodes between these two chats. But hey, maybe that was something we should be aware of as well. Maybe it was worth the wait.
Yeah.
Probably was. All right, my man. Well, you guys tuning in, make sure that you go check out the show notes. We'll have links, direct links to Srini's book and obviously the show and everything over at unmistakablecreative.com. You can head over to the show notes, chrisducker.com/episode177. Srini, thank you one more time for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, Chris, thank you. It's my pleasure, and I really appreciate you having me here.
Oh, it's all our pleasure, mate. For you guys tuning in, we'll be back at you again next week with another sit-down, another fantastic episode. In fact, we actually have Youpreneur community member Colin Gray, the podcast host, in the house next week. It's going to be a great show. Make sure you tune in. Until then, take good care, and bye-bye for now.
If the idea of an entrepreneurial community where you get to learn from the best in the business, as well as rub shoulders, gain support, have access to immediate feedback, as well as nonstop accountability from your peers, is something that excites you, then visit youpreneur.com for more information and to get started on building a business you can truly be proud of today. That's youpreneur.com. We'll see you on the inside.